As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello. I'm so excited to have Kristen with us tonight. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. Hi, everyone. And hi, Julie.
Hi. We're so excited to have Kristen share her story with you tonight. Kristen Beecher is a storyteller and news producer from Houston, Texas. She was diagnosed with narcolepsy at age 24, but had lived with symptoms for many years before that. As a speaker with Project Sleep's Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program, she tells her own story and hopes to let others living with narcolepsy know they are not alone. So it is just my huge honor and pleasure to introduce you guys to Kristen. Take it away.
Okay. Hi, y'all. So as Julie said, I'm Kristen. I grew up as an only child in Houston, Texas, and I'm extremely close to my mom and my dad. And as a kid, I really loved reading and writing. It was my absolute favorite thing to do. From all of that reading, I was really able to learn a lot about Black history, and then a lot of history about other marginalized groups, and their stories just really aren't told in schools, even though these are people who really built the foundation of the country that we live in. And so it was then that I realized, wow, I really want to tell people stories because they're really important. And so I used to pretend that I was a news anchor because I was really obsessed with the news because they were telling stories, and I would take a newspaper or magazines or anything really with words on it and tape it up on the wall and sit in my chair and pretend that I was reading the news like a teleprompter. And that really carried into my adulthood. Another thing that really carried into my adulthood was being goofy and funny. That's like how a lot of people describe me. When I was a teen trying to figure out what kind of woman I wanted to be like, I had all of these different people in my mind. I was really like Michelle Obama and Nikki Giovanni and Oprah. And I really like female rappers. I think that they're unapologetic women who just say what they want to say, really want to do. And I really was at the time like the biggest Nicki Minaj fan. So I would wear that blue Nicki Minaj wig everywhere. And I would wear it when I thought it was acceptable, which was never. That wig was plastic, you're from the dollar store, and ugly. And I have so many stories of people being like, Kristen, we're not going to talk to you if you don't take this thing off your head. And I don't know what happened to it. I feel like my mom probably threw it away because she's like, we need to get this thing out of the house. But that was a big part of my life, was just being goofy and silly. As I got into like high school, people would probably describe me as a sleepy kid. That was just kind of my thing. I slept a lot. But my symptoms really began when I was about 14, so starting high school. I was an overachiever and I got really good grades, but I was not a good student. I had a really hard time staying awake to study and a hard time staying awake in class to take notes, but I have an excellent memory. So if I was awake for the lecture, then I kind of got it. And so when I would try to take notes, they all kind of looked like a mess of scribbles. And one class that was particularly hard was Chinese. I took it for 2 years. If anyone actually speaks Chinese, this is about to be bad. Ni hao wo jiao Kristen wo shi ru sui. I just said, my name is Kristen, I'm 15. And that's the only thing I know how to say in Chinese. I am not 15, but I was 15 when I took the class, and it was a really, I couldn't remember anything else. from that class, but that one sentence. But what I do remember is the day that my really strict teacher became fed up with me sleeping all of the time. So it was a day not unlike most of the days that I, you know, had in high school. I was sitting in class. I was really tired and I could feel like a wave of sleepiness coming over me. And I could feel myself starting to do all the things that I do when I'm trying to stay awake in class. So I would blink my eyes over and over again, trying to wake myself up. And if that didn't work, sometimes I could walk around, but it's high school and your teachers don't let you just walk wherever you want to go. So a lot of times I was stuck at my desk and I would punch myself in the leg underneath the desk. And if that didn't work, I would stab myself with pencils or wear a rubber band and pop them to try to shock myself and wake myself up. And I was doing all of it, trying really hard not to draw attention to that because that's kind of not a normal thing to be doing in class. And then I just felt this wave of powerlessness, Kristen, you want to control your body, but your body is in control of you right now. So you're just going to have to go to sleep. And so it was a moment that felt pretty like defeat. I dropped my head. I went to sleep. I don't know how long I was asleep, but I know that something went whizzing past my head. And I woke up and I was like, what's going on? The whole class was laughing. My teacher looked so angry. She had thrown a box of tissues. She used to throw things. But she had thrown a box of tissues to try to wake me up. And I was really embarrassed. I stayed awake for the rest of that class. But nothing happened after that. No one said, hey, something's wrong with Kristen. It was just Kristen slept in class and she needs to figure out a way to stay awake. And I couldn't. After that, my sleepiness followed me all the way to Hampton, Virginia. I got a full ride to get a journalism degree at Hampton University, which is a historically Black college in Virginia. And when I was at Hampton, I did everything. I was in every club. I was in every organization. I was tired all the time, but I was very active, very involved, and got really pretty good grades, honestly. And I was in choir and I sang at every commencement. We would sit on the stage. In 2015, the commencement speaker was John Lewis. So just in front of me was the late Congressman John Lewis. And I was so excited to hear him speak, but I could not stay awake for the life. And I tried everything I could. He was telling a story about packing his bag, getting ready to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge on Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama. And it was an amazing story to be told with him just a few feet in front of me on the stage. And I couldn't stay awake. And I was so disappointed in myself because I was like, Kristen, this man is a civil rights icon. He's a leader. He's a hero. He's literally fought for your rights and you can't be bothered to stay awake. It's like, what's wrong with you? You sleep through everything and why can't you just get it together? I just remember that moment and remember that feeling of being really angry with myself. Another thing in college was people taking pictures of me to catch me slipping. That would be a thing we call Kristen slipping. I had just graduated from Honors College and another friend of mine was having a ceremony for her commencement. And I walked across campus and promptly sat in the auditorium and fell right asleep. I don't remember her. I didn't even know I went to her commencement. I don't remember that, but there's a picture of me there. So that was something that would happen all the time. I was all over social media sleeping or just pictures of me in people's phones. And I don't think my friends were doing it to be malicious. They thought it was funny, but it was something that I was really self-conscious about because I couldn't control it. And I knew that sometimes I was going to be looking not very cute when I was sleeping. I was invited to the Congressional Black Caucus Annual Legislative Conference in 2015. I was a youth ambassador. I was super excited to be there. And 2015 kind of felt a lot the way that this summer did this year. There was a lot of unrest. There was a lot of discussions about civil rights and the rights of Black people in this country. And I was really felt privileged to be there. And I met Sandra Bland's mother. Sandra Bland had died just a few months before this session. And there was a panel on police brutality and reform in the conference. And so I was really excited to be there. And I remember sitting in the conference and seeing all the cameras around. And as I was feeling myself being sleepy and falling asleep, I was like, girl, you better wake up because you're going to be on the news in DC asleep. Wake up. And I couldn't. And I was just so upset with myself. But I slept through it. It happened and I left. And I don't know if I was on the news in DC, but I do know 2 years later, I started getting all these texts girl, you're famous. What's going on? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, all of those cameras were for HBO. And they were shooting a documentary called Say Her Name, The Life and Death of Sandra Bland. And so the screen grab of the documentary, and I don't look like I'm sleeping, but I'm definitely sleeping because that's not my natural head position. That's me trying to make it look like I'm not asleep in public. And so I've never actually watched the movie because, one, that the subject matter is something that's just really heavy, but also seeing myself in this position and knowing that I had an opportunity to be there and see that live, and I just could not stay awake. And I was so upset with myself. Like, here's another one, this one on the internet, streaming in the homes of millions of Americans for everyone to see, is yet another time when I just couldn't be bothered to stay awake. And I was really just upset with myself. And I had a lot of moments where I would wake up in a place where I was like upset. Like, why? I just slept through that. And I don't even know what I missed. And so I didn't give myself a lot of grace, and I was really hard on myself because there were a lot of really important moments that I missed for sleeping. And my road to diagnosis, that's really like a tale of two cities. So I got my first news job in Fort Myers, Florida. It was an overnight schedule. I was working midnight to 9 a.m. And in that kind of schedule, everybody is sleepy in the beginning because that's not normal to be awake at night. But slowly everyone starts to get adjusted, and I just never did. It was still really difficult for me to adjust to those hours. But all those happy people in the background, Fox 4 in Fort Myers, they really didn't seem to care that I was sleeping. My boss would like say, all right, y'all, is Kristen awake before I make this announcement? And somebody would nudge me awake, and then they would speak. Like, it wasn't a big deal. And so I worked there for 2 years and nothing happened. Nothing. I was not diagnosed. But I got a really awesome blessing and opportunity to move to Houston. And at 24, I was working at the 8th largest market in the country at a station here in Houston, but I was still working overnight and I was really fatigued. Like, I was just so tired all the time. And so when I was working there, I started thinking that I was feeling like birds flying above my head. I could see the birds. I could hear their wings flapping. I could see the black flashes. And I was like, wow, the ceilings are so high in here. This is so crazy that a bird got in here and is like flying around our heads. And I was asking everybody, like, do y'all see these birds? No one sees the birds. And I was new and I didn't really talk that much. And they were probably like, who's this girl that's seeing birds? There are no birds in here. So I stopped asking people about the birds, but I was like, I know there are birds in here. And the job just gave me like a really high stress level. It was a lot of expectations on me. And at the same time, I was diagnosed with Sjogren's syndrome, and that's an autoimmune condition. And the closest thing I can do is describe it to lupus. And for me, it presents itself as a lot of joint pain and probably added fatigue. Can't really tell, which is why I have so much fatigue, but those are some of the main symptoms that I experienced. And so due to all of that, I was having all of these naps, a shift, and people started to tell my bosses on me. And I was like, I need to figure out what's going on because I felt like I was at risk of being fired. My boss kept saying, like, we see you sleeping. We know you're sleeping and it's not acceptable, Kristen. Like, what can we do to help you? And so after a lot of like tears and stress, I went to get a sleep study and I was surprised by my diagnosis. I was diagnosed with narcolepsy, which is a chronic neurological disorder that impairs the brain's ability to regulate the sleep-wake cycle. It affects 1 in 2,000 people, which is 200,000 Americans and roughly 3 million people worldwide, excuse me. And I was like, oh, great. Now I have a diagnosis. Y'all can give me a pill or something and we'll be good. And I was very, very wrong about that. Symptoms of narcolepsy vary by person, and they may include excessive daytime sleepiness. That's periods of extreme sleepiness during the day that feels comparable to how someone who doesn't have narcolepsy would feel after staying awake for 48 to 72 hours. So that's pretty much all the stories I told you about me being really sleepy all the time. That was me experiencing excessive daytime sleepiness. Other symptoms include cataplexy, which are striking and sudden episodes of muscle weakness, which are usually triggered by strong emotions like laughter, surprise, or anger. And it can vary from being as severe as the slackening of the jaw to the buckling of the knees or falling down. And it can last from a few seconds to several minutes. During cataplexy, the person remains fully conscious, even if unable to speak during an episode. I did not experience cataplexy. Hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, those are visual, auditory, or tactile hallucinations while falling asleep or waking up. They can be frightening and confusing. And so those birds that I was seeing, there were not birds. I'm glad I stopped asking people about them because no one else could see them. I was falling asleep or waking up. I'm not exactly sure. But once I was diagnosed and learned about this, I was able to really notice when I was seeing those birds that I was more tired than I thought I was. And I would do something like get up and walk around or drink some water to try to make myself stay awake. Another symptom is sleep paralysis, and that's the inability to move for a few seconds or minutes upon falling asleep or waking up. And those are often accompanied by the hallucinations. It's important to know that people without narcolepsy can experience sleep paralysis, but about 1/3 of all people experience them at some point in their life, usually during periods of high stress or poor sleep. But for people with narcolepsy, these are much more frequent and consistent over time. And another symptom that people probably wouldn't expect is disrupted nighttime sleep. So people with narcolepsy don't just sleep all the time. The timing of sleepiness is off with narcolepsy. And so a person may fight sleepiness during the day, but they can struggle to sleep at night. And I experience that a lot, waking up in the middle at 3 a.m. almost like every day, like it's time to wake up, but it's really not. And there are two forms of narcolepsy, narcolepsy with cataplexy and narcolepsy without cataplexy. Research suggests that narcolepsy with cataplexy is caused by a lack of hypocretin, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain that helps sustain alertness and regulate your sleep-wake cycle. And less is known about narcolepsy without cataplexy. I have narcolepsy without cataplexy, which is why I wish there was more research to know what exactly causes narcolepsy type 2 or narcolepsy without cataplexy. For diagnosis, that typically includes a 24-hour sleep study, so a nighttime portion, which is the polysomnogram, and a daytime nap portion, which is a multiple sleep latency test. And it's based on how quickly and frequently a person will go into rapid eye movement, REM sleep, which is the dream stage while you're sleeping. For treatment, there is currently no cure for narcolepsy, and treatment varies widely by person, but can include wake-promoting or medicines, which are like stimulants or histamine-directed medicines for daytime sleepiness, nighttime medications to increase wakefulness and reduce cataplexy, antidepressants to reduce cataplexy, and scheduled daytime naps. I have not been able to find a medication really that works with me. And the medication that I have had, I've not been very fond of the side effects. So I would rather just live my life the way that I was before I was diagnosed. But things that have really helped are the coping strategies of social support, like meetup groups or social media, and improvements in general health through sleep hygiene, diet, and fitness. Social support, like that should be at the top. that should be at the top of the treatment. I have found a community of people that I didn't even know that I was missing and I didn't know that I was a part of. And I think even when I don't have like a pill that can help me or something, I know for a fact that I can open Instagram and see someone. Like the Instagram algorithm is weird, but sometimes it's like right on time. And I'll open it and I'll see someone posting something that just really affirms the fact that I'm not alone and really helps me to realize that there are people who are living and making their way through with narcolepsy, and I can do it too, even if I'm feeling defeated, if it's 3 a.m. and I open my phone because I can't sleep. But my sleep hygiene, I don't sleep with my phone next to my bed anymore, so I don't do that. So I can try to go back to sleep if I wake up. So my life with narcolepsy, a lot of people were not surprised. This is a text from my friend. When I was first diagnosed, I started asking everyone, like, can I have pictures of me sleeping? Because I know y'all have them. And so she was like, why do you need the pictures? And I was like, well, she was like, because you used to be sleep, like narcolepsy sleep. And I said, well, I actually found out that I have narcolepsy, and that's why I'm asking everyone for pictures. And my friend said, OMG, bless your heart. How horribly hilarious, because we knew this. And it, the amount of people that were not surprised, which is pretty much everyone, when you explain what narcolepsy is and then see how I was living my life from about age 14 until 24 when I was diagnosed, it's like, duh. But now that I've been diagnosed, I've made a lot of lifestyle changes to allow for more rest in my life. So for one, I quit my job working overnight as a producer. It was really stressful and difficult on my body. In general, news producing is a stressful job, and working overnight with narcolepsy was really hard for me. And I was really fortunate that I was in a place where I could take a step back and stop working for a couple of months. to just really allow more rest. But on top of that, just not pushing myself as hard as I used to. And I think there's a really amazing blessing for me in having a diagnosis, which is like having this validation for knowing that I'm not just lazy, or it's not just because I'm not taking vitamins, mommy, if you're watching. It's not because I'm doing something to hurt myself. It's nothing that I can control. And while there are things that I can do to help, the problem is not me. And so that validation is really something that helps me when I feel bad, when I think back on stuff that I slept through or things that I missed. I'm just really glad about that. And so for the future, I don't know what the future is going to be like, but I just know that I have been fighting something that I had no clue I was fighting for so many years. And so that made me like a secret warrior. So now I'm like a warrior and it's not a secret. So I know that there are so many people with chronic illnesses who are so strong and they can do so many things. And like following these people on social media, I know that what the future holds for me is something great. Because of low awareness, and even among the medical community, there's an average of 8 to 15 years between symptom onset and diagnosis. And it's estimated that a majority of the people with narcolepsy are currently undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. So for me, I was not diagnosed for 10 years. I was always so tired, but I thought that was normal. And I thought that everybody felt like this. I thought that I was in college and that's normal to be tired, or I'm working, it's normal. And so I thought that I just need to push myself to work harder, to keep grinding. And I didn't know what sleep health was. So I had no clue how just unhealthy that I actually was. And now that I'm aware of how sleep affects everything, it's actually really wild for me to look back and realize how I walked around for 10 years with a sleep disorder and I got no help. And so it just really bothers me that lack of awareness leaves so many people feeling alone and confused, and that I have to keep reminding people that sleep health is health because it's really important. And so I feel like if I had seen somebody that looks like me tell a story that sounded like mine, I could have gone to doctors earlier. As a journalist, I understand the importance of a story, and I understand the importance of telling your story and how the change that can make. So if telling my story and advocating for sleep research and sleep health awareness can push someone to go to a doctor sooner, or push a doctor to think about maybe recommending one of their patients to a neurologist or a sleep health clinic, then I'm never going to stop telling my story. I'm going to tell it forever because I just know how important a story is. So I just want to say thank you to everybody for listening to me. And thank you so much, Julie, for giving me this opportunity and for creating this platform for so many people to find each other and to find a community. So thank you.
Yay! Great job, Kristen. Thank you for sharing your story and being part of Rising Voices, and for going there to moments that you don't even maybe like remembering, and sharing them so other people hopefully can get help sooner. So I love your story. I could hear it every day, especially I'm a huge Nicki Minaj fan, so I never had a blue wig, but thank you, Kristen.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
You've spent your career and your education in media and news production. And narcolepsy is always trying to get more, you know, coverage in the media. How has your experience been so far bringing those two things together as far as getting more coverage for narcolepsy? Or what are you seeing about how the media covers narcolepsy today?
That's a really good question. I honestly, as I was working with the World Narcolepsy Day 2020 Committee, I was really trying to push to get the story out there about World Narcolepsy Day and just people's narcolepsy stories in general. And I've learned a lot, even those couple of weeks that I was really pushing for that, about my industry and about how they choose health stories. And so I just think that as a whole, any type of advocacy for health, you would think would be something that a news outlet would want to cover. And that typically is, but for some reason, sleep health isn't seen as health. And so it kind of seems like, well, we can cover it maybe, or we can do something maybe if we have time, but that wouldn't be necessarily the case for, let's say, a story about breast cancer or a story about diabetes. And so I think that, and that's something that I don't know exactly how we can get to that place, but I think there, of course, there are people who, if you have an amazing story, there are people who want to hear your story. And I know the importance of it and putting a story out there on narcolepsy or sleep health in general can really do so much. And there are people who have seen stories on the news and gotten help because of it. So I get the importance, and I just really wish and hope that my industry will take it a little more seriously. And I guess that's why I'm here. So
thank you. Yeah, I think, well, and we talked about this, you and I, that it was a strange year too because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that it seemed to be that, like, if we could have a tie-in somehow with the pandemic, then that would maybe help a little bit more.
Yeah.
But we did get a few really good news stories. And if you guys are interested in doing more media work, Kristen and I and Kylie, one of our board members, did a great training session together. And I know that that led at least, you know, two really wonderful of Rising Voices advocates to get their story covered. So, you know, we're getting there slowly but surely. Got to be patient. But thank you for, you know, lending your perspective. I remember when I first saw Kristen was in news production and going to do Rising Voices. And I thought, this could be very convenient. and she's just dedicated so much time and thoughtful energy to that. So, all right. So we have a question from Matt. Matt would like to know, he says, you have met many influential people and community leaders. Who was the most impactful, and who would you like to meet in the future?
Most impactful, I would say meeting Geneva Veal Reed, which is Sandra Bland's mother, was like an extremely impactful moment, because for someone who was like so fresh in her like grieving and mourning, she took me and two of my friends, and she was like, you guys are my daughters. I pick up daughters everywhere I go. And when she found out that I was in journalism, she like specifically spoke to me and talked to me about the importance of using my voice to tell stories, and especially stories of like her daughters, so that we could lead to change. And it was just, I was still in college, so I hadn't ever even produced a newscast ever. But like hearing that was just like a real like testament that I was in the right place and I was going in the right direction. And so that was really impactful for me, and for someone who could have had every right to just be like, hi, nice to meet you, I have to go on about my day. But she really took the time to pour into me. And someone who I would like to meet, I want to meet Stacey Abrams. She's awesome. And she's just a woman that is just changing the world and never taking no for an answer. And it's like, oh, you're going to try to block me this way? Well, cool, I'll do this. And so just like her unapologetic, like boss attitude is everything. And I would love to meet her. She's awesome.
So Nicki Minaj didn't quite rise to the top there?
She didn't rise to the top.
She's got to be somewhere in like the ballpark though, because that would be pretty awesome.
That would be awesome.
A great answer. Okay. So Lizzie, hi Lizzie. Lizzie would like to know, no pressure, but have you reached out to any of your college professors or high school teachers about your diagnosis?
I reached out to a professor. I think she commented on my Facebook or something. And she just said, wow, like Kristen, you're so strong. And I was actually the second student that she knew that had narcolepsy. So there was somebody else at Hampton. Hey. But she actually reached out to me. So no, I haven't reached back. But I feel like I think about my Chinese teacher a lot. She was a character. And I would really like to see what's up with her and let her know that she thought all types of stuff was wrong with me because I was sleeping in her class so much. So I would like to let her know what was going on.
That'd be cool. Well, maybe you'll let us know and there'll be an update to your presentation.
Yes.
I wonder if she's still throwing Kleenex boxes at kids' heads.
Oh, I hope not.
Times have changed?
I don't know. Probably. I don't think she works there anymore.
Yeah, I have a feeling if you were throwing Kleenex boxes, I don't know. Doesn't seem great. Okay, let's see. We have a question from Victoria. Hi, Victoria. She wants to know, did you notice a change in symptoms living in different areas?
Living in different areas, I noticed a change in symptoms. Yes. So, and this is just, I believe, because of like daylight savings kind of thing. I moved home. I moved back to Houston from Florida right around daylight savings time last year. And I ended up, then I like switched my hours, just a couple, like my work hours by starting a little bit earlier. And so from like losing an hour and then starting work a little bit earlier, I felt like if there was like a narcolepsy switch, I like turned that bad boy up to 10,000. And I don't know if that was, a real thing or not, but I do know that like moving and then losing an hour and then losing an hour for daylight savings, I was just like, all right, this is awful. I need to go back to Florida or something.
I always feel like humidity impacts, but I feel like both Florida maybe and Texas are both pretty humid.
Yeah. I mean, it's hot and awful in both places. So I left heat and came to more heat. So.
Okay. Matt would like to know, is there a suggestion for young storytellers for approaching news professionals to get their stories heard?
I think building genuine connections with the reporter or the news anchor or whoever they want to tell their story to. Like, we're regular people. And honestly, if they work in news, then they understand the importance of a story and they understand how to make your story into something beautiful and amazing. And so I think like if you can follow them on social media, if that's an easy way to get in contact with people right now, and pay attention to the types of stories that they do to realize, oh, well, they seem to really care about health. If you look at the reporters in your station, at the local stations, you can kind of tell the ones who do the 5K for some cause or who are always making sure that they have on a pin or a tie leading to some sort of awareness month. So I would think like looking for people who seem to really care about health and health advocacy, because even if they're not actually advocating because of their own connection to the condition, I think like finding a person who seems to really care about health in general would really help.
Yes, that is a great, great, great point. It's always about genuine connections. I think that's like, you know, so important when we think about reaching anyone really. And I was just going to add to also not be too worried if you don't hear back from people, because I think, you know, just do try to reach out to a lot because you never really quite know who's going to respond. Do you want to mention anything about that, Kristen?
Oh, definitely. So, I mean, I wouldn't say put all your eggs in one basket. Like if there's, in most cities, there are four stations. Like if you want to get on, if you're trying to get it on TV. So there are people at all of those places. There's so much now. There's so many different avenues for storytelling. There are blogs, there are podcasts. And a lot of those are way more willing to take stories from people like off the street. So I would say reaching out to as many people as you can respectfully and not in a stalkerish way, because you don't want to become that person that everyone knows won't stop emailing the station. But I just think definitely looking for blogs or podcasts, Instagram pages, like influencers in your community. That's a really easy way to, you can start small. And then if that gets big, it can then get picked up by who knows.
Awesome. Okay. You have a question. Do you have any suggestions to teach people who are newly diagnosed how important it is to find support groups and also to advocate for what they need?
I can just say again, support is really important. Like since I was diagnosed and then the pandemic hit a month later, basically, because it was the end of January, I have not actually met anybody in person, but that doesn't feel, it doesn't feel like that. So I think like even the easiest thing to do is to go to Instagram or Facebook or Twitter and type in hashtag narcolepsy and then follow the narcolepsy hashtag. And that's how I started. And that's, I'm pretty sure how I found Project Sleep. And I'm pretty sure I found Julie first, actually. And then I'm a creeper, so I was just going through everybody's life. But I think that's really helpful. And then be a little bit of a creeper. And when you go through people's pages, like look at their lives and you can see like people's lives really look just like yours and they have narcolepsy. And so that helped me build up the courage to reach out. And so sometimes I reach out to people now just off the fact that they posted a picture, and that's really helpful. And what was the second part of that question?
How to advocate for what they need.
I'm still learning this, I would say, but when I have started working again, and I know for like advocating, especially like in the workplace for what I need, that's a personal decision for everyone. I went back and forth on whether I was going to disclose, but I'm very proud that of myself that I did, because it saved me from working a night shift again. And it also just lets me have like some sort of safety net. If I feel like, okay, I really do need to take a nap. I'm working from home, so it's easier. But if we were in a station and I needed to step away, if I didn't advocate for myself and I just let things happen to me as I was doing before in my old jobs, that was just a lot of added stress that didn't need to be there. And so I'm still working on that, because it is kind of scary sometimes. And it is telling people your business that you might not want to tell. You have every right not to. But I just think for what I'm doing right now, it does, the benefits outweigh the risks.
Yeah. And I just want to add, Kim, thank you for supporting your spouse with narcolepsy. There's a longer comment that she had first before the question, but you know, I think it's like, you know, it was a journey for me. It took me about, I think it was 8 months before I got, my parents dragged me to a Narcolepsy Network conference. I didn't want to go. I didn't know what I thought other people would be like. And then I was really glad they did ultimately, but I resisted support from other people. So I definitely kind of understand that perspective too. And, you know, advocating for myself was a process too. And so I wish that, you know, everyone was a little bit like Kristen and, you know, was hashtag searching the hashtags and getting involved so quickly. Like I can't still believe that Kristen was just diagnosed in January. And like, she feels so much a part of this community in my own life. And when I think of my own journey, I was nowhere where Kristen is as far as being part of the community so quickly. And so I know everyone's sort of on their own path and we can't always force that, which stinks. But thank you, Kim, for being a supportive spouse and just being there for your loved one, because that is very meaningful as well. And being here to hear about other people's stories. So if you could have your own media platform to amplify stories that cross multiple identities or communities you identify with, or ones you don't, what would you want it to be or look like?
Oh, wow. I think about this a lot. I've been thinking about this probably my whole life, like how I would, but I would just want a place like a mobile community that everyone feels welcome and that their stories feel important. And so something that would definitely be amplifying stories of women, of young people of color, of disabled people, of people of the queer community, like communities that are not, that are told that they're other and that are told that like, let's amplify an underrepresented voice in this major organization. Like I wouldn't want it to be a special highlight when you talk about someone who's typically underrepresented. I want it to look like this is what it's supposed to be. I want it to just look like you belong here and we're not throwing you a bone by telling your story. We're not working to, you know, increase diversity by telling your story. Like you exist and you deserve to be told about in a way that the majority of the world gets talked about. And so I don't exactly like know how that would look, because that's a huge undertaking, but just something that doesn't make it feel like, well, today we're going to highlight this one voice. I want it to feel like every day we're highlighting all of the voices, because that's what the world looks like.
I'm ready for that platform. That sounds great. Let's see. I think that's it for questions. So I just want to thank Kristen so much for being part of this program and for sharing your story tonight. Yeah, it's just really important, and feel so lucky to know you and have you part of this dream team.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.